kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me as usual, Cole's here, Tim's here, Chris is here, Purnell's here. Everyone's been talking. I don't know how much of this is actually going to be in the show. I don't fucking know. How's everyone doing?
Probably everything from this point forward, let's say, for sure, should be on the show. Well,
the music just ended right now, so what's up, everybody?
If you give a fuck about what we were talking about in advance, you can't get it on our Patreon anymore. You'll have to actually go watch the VOD on Twitch.
Yeah, visit us on Twitch.
Go fuck yourself.
Welcome back. Go fuck yourself.
You're supposed to like the listeners.
I don't know how to like people. I only know how to say go fuck yourself.
It's we've learned that over the past couple of years.
That's the language of love in France. So
every developer interview ends with "Go fuck yourself." No, go fuck yourself. I'll fucking kill
you, buddy. No, fuck you, buddy.
Go give yourself a fuck.
Your face.
Oh my lord! So Tim and Purnell, this is your first show back since our holiday break. How are you two doing? How was your break? Anything fun happen in the meantime?
I completed a game.
Did you get some gamer score?
I actually did complete one game, and it was not on the list of games I told myself during my time off. I played through the entirety of Yuppie Psycho in one sitting.
Wow.
That doesn't sound like Ori.
It's not Ori. Ori was unlockable in the game. You could find Ori in the office, and then you could like put him on your desk, and it was like, yo, look at this game I should be playing. No time. There's a witch to kill. And then you just kind of go and do that part. But like, I got really addicted to that, and then another game I came across, which came out of nowhere, that I'm now addicted to. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's like that 2021, like, you know, air, feeling in the air. But it's a game called like Anomi or Omori, that's what it is. And it's like this weird little like RPG that popped up on Steam on Christmas Day, apparently. And I've become addicted to it. And I'm going to finish it probably in a week or so because I've played a lot. And I don't know. I like that momentum. And aside from that, exercise has still been trying to go. I kind of threw a little bit of caution to the wind specifically for the fact of I wanted to get back out. So I'm back to burning 3,000 calories at the arcade again, but now I do it with a mask on my face. And it's
DDR.
That's right. Pump it up in DDR. And nice. It just gets sweaty. And now I do it while wearing a 40-pound vest.
Jesus.
It is bongos, but it works. Like I come out of there freaking covered in sweat. That's what gyms need.
So it's basically like you're exercising, but with boobs.
I don't know. If anybody out there's got 40-pound boobs, then I truly, truly pity him.
You might be surprised.
Dude. Yeah, boobs are heavy. There's a reason women have to have surgery because their backs hurt.
My God. See, that sounds like hell to me because like I wear the vest. And I will say the thing that makes me mad about the vest, though, let's be real. We all saw this coming, but I had to still think it for a while. I had the whole anime thing going. I was like, I'm going to put the vest on and I'm going to exercise, but then I'm going to take it off before I'm done and I'm going to feel so much lighter and start putting it out there. And then you know what happens? You put the vest on and you're weighed down, but then you take it off and you're tired. So it doesn't fucking matter how much lighter you are. You're tired and you pass out anyway. Because now you don't leave as big of an indentation on your bed when you do it. But
for the record, Google says an average pair of D cups weigh 15 to 23 pounds.
Jeez. For the pair or each?
An average pair of D cups.
23 pounds. Oh my God.
The equivalent of carrying around two small turkeys.
So go get two butter balls.
Mm-hmm.
Drape them around your neck.
Two butterballs.
Go get you. Go to the Walmart and get you a sports bra, and then stick you two turkey breasts down.
No, no sports bra. He's got to let them flop free, like nature intended.
That's how you like get a black eye.
How the vest works? I pretty much am doing that because the way the vest takes on the weight is like it's half in the front and half in the back. So basically, I'm walking around with 20-pound tips.
So if you do the strapping turkeys to your neck thing and walk around in the store, you'll get to empathize not only with the weight, but also with the rude stares.
That's true.
Especially the rude stares.
People will want to look at that.
Can't I just walk around with two birds on my chest in peace?
My eyes are up here.
I like your turkeys.
I get that you have a fascination with my breast birds here, but seriously, I need you to look at my eyes, not my birds. I appreciate that. Less skin.
Oh my God. So, Tim, how was your break?
Oh, that was fine.
Melvin, that's fine.
Did you stroll around with turkey breasts on your chest?
We got a lot of snow on Christmas and thereafter, and I hung out with my child for a week, and then we wanted to stab each other by the end of it, and then he started going back to school, and I started going back to work. I've played a lot of Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which is not what I expected to be doing in the interim, but it showed up on Christmas Day for me, and somehow I ended up playing way more of that than Yakuza, Dragon. At this point, which not really a slight at Yakuza, or not intended to be, but it was like what happened, because Yakuza is something I need to pay slightly more attention to, and dude, Assassin's Creed is not. but that led to me playing. I had time like in the afternoon when my kid was doing something one day, so I was like, I'm gonna check out Assassin's Creed while we're sitting around here, you know, hanging around in the house, and. I did, and then we didn't watch, or I didn't get a chance to play Yakuza in the evenings for a few days because we were watching the new season of Letterkenny, and then all of a sudden, I'm way more into Assassin's Creed, which is good. Well, I mean, it's the first, I have not really gotten very engaged in an Assassin's Creed since Black Flag, which is many years ago at this point.
Black Flag, a launch title for the PS4 and Xbox One.
Oh, that's right, because they did the bootleg back generation version of Black Flag Rogue, right? So 2013 is the last time I spent a lot of time playing an Assassin's Creed, and I kind of touched the other ones and didn't really get into it. They kind of screwed the pooch a bit with 3, and yeah, I don't know. So, and then I didn't really like Origins. I gave that one a pretty solid shot, and I didn't really like what they were doing with it, with the shift to the open world thing. But they apparently made enough changes between there and Valhalla for it to really appeal to me. So, yay!
Yeah, I'm enjoying my time with Valhalla. It's an easy game to just get lost in and run around and just do some missions and find some question marks on the map and see what the hell's going on and what kind of little cool fun stories they snuck into the game.
Yeah, like that's kind of it, isn't it? It's just like it's easy for me to sit down and dick around for any amount of time. But I do like how like those little side mysteries, the world mysteries, are not very much of a time commitment. Usually it's like 5-10 minutes, if that. There's one where it's literally just had to sit around and listen to a guy talk about his daughter, and tell the story of his life. And that was it. Experience for me. Yay.
Wait, so has he do any actual gameplay?
Not really. Just kind of talking to him, like looking at stuff around his cottage and him reminiscing about his life. Like that was it. There's some that are like really weird, like the one where I found a sewer lady who I had to bring a bunch of snake eggs so she can make a giant fart and offend the townspeople above.
Yeah, I did that one. That was a good one.
That was pretty amazing.
I like the neighbors who were bitching about the corn supply or the oat supply they had, whatever it was.
Burned their fucking silo down, and it's like, problem solved.
And for mine, their house has caught fire, too. So, like, everything is burning down, and the families are like, thank you for what you did.
Things experience are so much better now. And I'm like, all right, if you say so.
Well, you're homeless, but cool.
Let me get on my horse and ride. Bye. But I think the actual like stories of each region are also pretty good as well. I'm just trying to not get too deep in the weeds of trying to tick off every single thing on the map, because I know that that will only lead to ruin. So I'm trying not to do that.
Yeah, that will lead to your downfall.
Absolutely.
It's a dangerous game.
Oh, man. So, yeah, we're back. We are back at it. Before our show went live, we were deep into a discussion on achievements. And, Tim, I believe you wanted to say something.
No, I didn't. I was just...
No, you're just being a dick about that?
Yep. Yep, absolutely.
100%. So, Cole, anything you want to mention about achievements now that we're actually live on the show?
Make of them what you will. And if you really give a fuck about what the ratio is, this is what I was trying to say when you stopped me and was like, hey, we aren't even recording this, you dumb bitch.
Joe said that?
He did. I heard him with my own four ears.
I did.
How can you prove that he didn't?
Exactly.
Listen to the show.
No evidence. No. But
like, if achievements mean shit to you and you give a fuck about what they're worth to the point that like you get upset when ones aren't worth a certain amount, check fucking TA, and TA can tell you what shit is worth. Play the ones you want to move your rank up, and let other people enjoy their cheap easy shit, because I like my cheap easy shit. Stop bitching about it.
I have to find a 7-pointer because I am inching up on 600,000, so I want to get back to zeros and land right on there.
Yeah, I'm currently sitting with a 32 at the end.
Retire the account and start fresh with a brand new account.
Oh no, fuck that.
You have to get 666,666.
No, the end goal would have been 420, but we already passed that.
Yeah.
And now we're just going for a mil.
There is no end goal. I had a goal to hit 400,000 by the end of the year, and I did, and now I'm at 425 already. So I don't know what what to make my next goal for, because clearly East Asia Soft and Radalic and Exilion are going to just keep pumping me full of the sweet, sweet, easy 1Ks.
Pumping full.
sweet can.
Cole, you'll be sad to know that the latest Radalic and Zilon game went to Jacob. Yeah.
He asked about them.
What did I do to you?
Damn. I felt bad for him after the whole...
I don't give a fuck about Jacob!
Muggy.
Fuck that motherfucker.
You know, that is on the recording.
Yes. Yes, all this is on the record.
You know, the shame of it is he won't fucking listen to it, though.
He might. No. If I mention in the write-up that we talk about him, he might listen.
Well, in that case, fuck you, Jacob. Fuck you twice over.
Talk about Jacob.
I'm going to cry.
I just want to make him want to play more.
After he asks, like, every week he asks about a Radalic game after we've already reviewed it, and then he's sad about it.
The rule is Tuesdays. They're mine. Wait, no, didn't you? Well, not the East Asia Soft, but I think you gave me the Radalica too.
I did. See, you got your Radalica this week anyway.
That, and I already completed it. I did that shit last night.
Yeah, that was an easy one. We'll talk about that one next episode.
But we will. I will knock his head off if he takes another Radalica from me.
Normally, I give them to Chris or Purnell anymore.
Spaghetti until like the cows come home.
But oh, Tim, you got Freddy Spaghetti. Did you play that at all?
Oh, I forgot.
No. Did you? It's not worth your time.
These names of games they're coming out with. Freddy Spaghetti. It's like a nursery.
I mean, all the good ones were taken like 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, like Super there was Mario an Brothers. Atari 2600 game called Tanks, but No Tanks.
See?
You're welcome.
This is an age-old tradition.
Just awful game titles.
Freddy Spaghetti is literally about a sentient spaghetti noodle.
Could have been Luigi Lasagna, but they just dropped that ball.
And it was
no what a sued.
Garbage.
Luigi Linguini. That's even better.
Linguini. Jesus. Abigail Angel Hair.
I would have played that.
I'm not so sure I didn't already.
Check that. Check for one of those 1,000 kills, 1K.
Anger in chat. Oh no, not Freddy Spaghetti again. I'm going to have flashbacks.
People are like, did you play that? And I'm like, fuck if I remember.
It was a drunken bender, a 5-minute bender.
Are we recording yet?
No, show. None of this has been recorded. This
thought
is.
I check.
Yeah,
this is pure
unarchived. Oh, so I need to tell Jacob to fuck off again once we do start recording.
I mean, you can say that as much as you want.
Fuck off.
Like during a review, like so. This game I'm talking about is.
Rhythm Fighter Tim, out of 5, how many fuck offs do you give Jacob?
Oh, all of them, all that are available. How many do we have on the shelf?
We have an overabundance of fuck-offs.
Not sure how many
have
dispensed at this point.
I like Jacob. He's okay.
Why do I have
I like him. He's okay. Ooh. That's the best praise you can offer. He's fine.
He's better than not fine. I mean, that's a good thing. Try for lack of for fineness state.
I've encountered worse people.
See, now I just have to title the episode Jacob's Okay and he'll have to listen. Yes. Like, why is it called Jacob's? Fuck off, Jacob. Oh, that's why they fuck off, Jacob. Oh wow, they're really going for it. Fuck off, Jacob. God damn, they're just brutal tonight.
You gotta keep listening for the good part, Jacob. Just keep going.
Yeah, keep going. Fuck off, Jacob.
Pasta, Mufasta. I'm just reading.
Oh, Percy.
Oh, shit. So, should we get to reviews, or is there anything anyone else wanted to talk about?
Oh my God, okay, Jacob.
I want to talk about iced tea, the drink, and the actor. So the actor drinking the drink.
I mean, if you want to talk about drinks, have you tried Major Melon Mountain Dew yet?
I haven't seen it.
No?
I'm here for that and the Cocoa Pepsi.
I have the Major Melon. It's really good.
Did somebody say Cocoa Pepsi?
That's correct. There was supposedly a hot chocolate Pepsi that was going to get put out. And interesting. I haven't seen it. I heard that Walmart was carrying it, but I never go to Walmart. So I was like, someone will have to carry that isn't Walmart. And I have yet to see it. So I was like, I might just... I've missed out. I don't know.
I have not heard of a Cocoa Pepsi.
It was supposed to be a Christmassy winter beverage, more so for winter than Christmas. And I haven't seen it, but I want it. And I want Major Melon. I want these beverages.
I want these beverages.
Flash it of me, but you need more wine and a little bit of cheese.
I want it now. It's my money and I want it now.
It's Cocoa Cola.
Oh, yes.
That's what it's called, yeah.
Hmm.
It just makes sense and it's delicious. At least I would like to think so, but I can't find it. So,
but now we found some games. Should we talk about them?
Is it cocoa flavored?
No. The first game to talk about is called Golden Force, developed by Storybird Studio, published by Pixel Heart, released January 28th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $19.99. The King of Demons sets his sight on Muscle Island, a paradisical and peaceful place where it's good to live. Then, wasting their last coins in the taverns of the island, some mercenaries from the feared Golden Force enjoy their last moments of vacation when they receive a new contract, beat down this new evil in order to take back the mountain of gold in his possession. Purnell, tell us about Golden Force.
So Golden Force is a 2D action platform game where you control one of 4 different characters and you progress across a series of stages that are broken down by island type. So the way the game generally works is you go left to right. Sometimes you have to do vertical scaling as well. You can do a melee attack that runs with a basic combo where you hit the attack button, you go up to like 3 or 4 hits. And you can jump. There's a slide attack, which I honestly never really found a true use for, so I just kind of didn't do it. And then there's a dash move, which allows you to dash forward and strike. You can also dash upwards and strike. And on a beautiful note, you can also air dash. which you'll be doing a lot to get maneuverability in. But unfortunately, no diagonal dashes. You perform these measures to get through the stages. Your melee attack can also be charged up to do a sort of smash attack, which does greater damage. But in addition, certain enemies, when hit, if the attack doesn't outright kill them, it will launch them in a direction of your choosing. And this attack can be launched diagonally, which is kind of nice. So you'll be utilizing these maneuvers to play through the game. As you play through stages, you will come across basically not too many particular power-ups. There's like treasure chests you can find where smashing them up will unveil coins, and which can be spent at the like a ship shop outside of the stages, though there isn't much you can really buy at the ship shop. There's like just one-time use items like temporary invincibility, a temporary attack boost, elemental attacks in the form of fire and ice, though they're not really particular. Like ice will freeze an enemy. Fire, I think, just does more damage. I didn't notice anything particular that it did aside from damage. And then the other things that you can acquire on the stage are like the collectible of the game, which are like coins and Nautilus shells. One Nautilus shell per stage, three coins per stage. And unlike the normal money, these things are used to purchase specifically additional combos on your combo string and additional hit points on your character. It starts out small, like one hit point costs you three of the coins, which means four coins. So it's like, six coins, and I'm sticking with it. It costs
four. I think it was eight.
How many coins? Wait, how many coins was it?
I want to say it was eight, actually.
Well, Joe, on this one, it was eight coins to buy your first hit point upgrade.
It was a number between 1 and 257.
And that's what it's a big number. Big number. And it's four Nautilus shells to get your first combo upgrade. However, it was four. Stop being evil. I can't count. I need numbers. I need a number. Once you make your first purchase, the amount to purchase
first or second
increases. God damn it, man! increase most likely by double. So originally it cost 8 coins. The next one will cost you about 14 to 16 coins.
Man, you just need to stop saying numbers at this point. Unless you absolutely have to.
12, 95, 83, 74.
It's dangerous game. Golden Force is a dangerous game. 10-yard fight. So you basically end up trying to collect these items with the intent of being to increase your attack power, your attack output and your hit point gauge. And you want the hit point gauge to be there because you will take damage, because surprisingly the game is pretty difficult. Like, it's not an easy game. You start out the game with like 4 or 5 hit points. No numbers. And you take every time you get hit, you get 1 damage until you die, with the occasional item that pops that gives you health. But some of the levels can be pretty lengthy, honestly. So you're going to be, you know, rationing those hit points as you progress through the levels. There is no life counter, though. So if you do die, you'll just respawn back at the nearest checkpoint. And the only downside is like any money you collect, it will be gone. So if you hit a checkpoint, any coins you found before the checkpoint, gone once you die. Once you die. So that's the trade-off for not being having any lives in the game. But it does mean that you have a better opportunity to get through the entire game. At the end of every world, there is a boss battle. And I actually like the boss battles in this game because they're fairly lengthy. Like, you do have to do a lot. It's not like the typical hit them 3 times and they go away big. You got to wail on these jerks. And they have
more than 3 attacks.
Yes, it does. It takes a big number, a large amount of hits, and then describable value of blows to the enemy's cranial spaces to eventually take it down, which I do enjoy because, again, it makes you work for the victory. If you do beat a level, in the sense like every island has 4 items, like 4 stages to it, each with 3 coins and a Nautilus shell. If you manage to acquire all those things across those 4 stages, you unlock a bonus world, kind of like how Yoshi's Island did it, where it's generally like a much more difficult stage for that world. If you go to those levels, prepare to get your ass handed to you because they don't mess around.
And but Golden Force handed me my ass the entire game. I don't know what you're talking about. This game just kicked my ass. I had a hard time playing this one.
It's because you suck.
I do.
It's just cold-blooded. Cold-blooded. Like, the game is not easy, that's for sure. However, I am thankful at least that due to the infinite retry options, it allows you to at least kind of brute force it if you just want to keep trying till you get it right.
Yeah.
I kind of appreciate that kind of thing. Like, I kind of feel like the extra life mechanic has lost its way since the days of, like, how since Mario started just kind of giving you 99 lives easily. Not referring to that stupid 3-1 trick on the first game. Screw that shit. I'm talking about when, like, it was easy to get 1-ups to the point where they became kind of lost their value. But it didn't mean the games themselves stopped having difficult stages. It just means you always had more than enough lives to just brute force it. And if you didn't have enough at a time, you just grind it for more on another level. So whatever. So I like the idea of having difficult stages without having to be concerned about how many times you die trying to complete it. The only downside I really found to this game is that most particularly, this isn't a slight to the game, though it would be something that would make it better, is that illusion of choice, as I like to call it. Whereas you got four characters, I'm sure the game advertises choose from four characters, but they all play pretty much the same. I was expecting the dragon to have maybe a stronger attack, but or maybe be able to, like, kind of slightly float because he's got wings on. No, nope. Same guy. I was expecting maybe the woman that has, like, the two scimitars.
Oh, what do you expect out of women, Purnell?
A longer combo string because she's got two swords.
Right. Wait, is it two or is it three?
She's Kali. She's secretly Kali. She's got eight swords. Holy shit. I was expecting her to maybe have a longer combo string or something because she's wielding two weapons.
Purnell, I fully expect you to give Tim as much shit as he's giving you during his review.
I don't even know how I'll be able to. I just kind of set myself up by having a numeric nightmare or the beginning of this
thing. The numeric nightmare.
But in the end of the day, it's like the game. But that also, the other aside from that, the other issue I have with is that I wish there were more ability upgrades that you could buy at the shop. Like, the shop is just kind of there more so to be like, hey, this will make it slightly easier for you on the stage because now you can resurrect if you die because you just spent 8,000 coins on a one-time use potion. But, I mean, it's better to have it than not. I just wish it was something like, hey, if you buy this, you can do two air dashes instead of one. Or if you buy this, you got a permanent ice weapon. I don't know anything. So take that for what you will. But those things aside, I found one funny gripe I had. This is more humor than anything. I don't know what it was with them, but there was a point in the game where every time you enter a stage, they'll tell you entering level such and such and such, and it has a level title for the stage. There comes a certain point where they kind of forgot to edit that in. So it literally says L_2_1 level title 0. Like, it just has it in words like, this was meant to have a title and we didn't put it in yet. So I got a serious laugh at that. But it doesn't hurt the game. It's just funny to point out. But that aside, though, the game I found to be quite enjoyable. It kind of feels like a nice Genesis throwback game. Music is good. Graphics are great. You'll be challenged, and you'll feel like you earned that victory when you get to the end, and the Golden Force gets his golden reward.
I got a Shantae vibe from the visuals.
Shantae?
I can go with that for sure, especially with, like, the woman with the swords is definitely, like, the same style of, like, outfit that she Shantae would wear. So
she's got purple hair.
Shantae. What would you think of it, Joe? You said you played some of it too, aside from the difficult element, of course.
I think it's really fun. I kind of wish it leaned more into some RPG elements with, like, leveling up and damage upgrades and health upgrades and stuff like that, besides just buying the minor upgrades in the store. I wanted there to be more to it, but I enjoyed what was there and what it was going for. It just left me wanting a little.
Yeah, I feel you on that. I wholeheartedly agree with you.
Well, overall, $20 on Golden Force. What do you think?
I'd say it's a buy. It's a fun time. Just be ready to be challenged.
Works for me.
Yes. Yes.
How many yeses do you give that one?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Oh, man. All right. Next game to talk about is called Rhythm Fighter, developed by Echo Games, published by Coconut Island Games, released January 14th on the Switch for $16.99. This is a roguelike horizontal action game that players need to follow the beats to defeat opponents. Beats to follow, fist to bone, face the foe, and dance to kill. Tim, tell us about Rhythm Fighter.
All right. Rhythm Fighter. So this is a... It is a game that is trying to amalgamize rhythm games and beat 'em ups, which I reviewed a game that was trying to do that like a year and a half ago, and I didn't like it, and I don't remember what it was called, but I didn't like it. And it's probably why I don't remember what it was called. Sorry, game. So, you know, I'm always kind of looking for, you know, some good rhythm stuff, and... Yeah, that game, whatever it was called, that mystery game. Sorry, developers. didn't
sorry, developers of game I didn't like. I'm not going to name you to further shame you.
it didn't merit, renting an apartment in my brain. But so, you know, I saw like, okay, Rhythm Fighter, like, all right, well, we'll give it a shot. We'll see what this game has going for it, if anything. But as it turns out, I think this game gets it, and I'll probably remember the name of it because it is real easy to remember. Rhythm Fighter. It's a rhythm game in which you fight. So in addition to being a rhythm beat 'em up, it's also a roguelike. So it's just ticking all the indie boxes, if you will. So you start out, you get a character. It drops you into a level. Ultimately, like, kind of the order of the levels it gives you are randomized, and each level kind of has a different theme. It's in a different place on the planet with different music. So, and you have to, once you get in the level, you are hopping around to the beat. So it's one of those where all your actions have to be to the beat, and your actions are, there's a couple different ways to control the game. So you point your character in the right direction. You move by clicking your bumper to a hop forward, do a little jump hop forward. You also have a dodge roll, and you have your basic attack. You have a special attack, and then you have a special item ability that you will pick up eventually. You will start picking up special items. And so it's the attack, your attacks and rolls that need to line up with the rhythm. And it's not a thing like with Crypt of the NecroDancer, which is probably its closest analog in terms of a rhythm action-y game. It's not a thing where you have to keep pressing on the beat. Like, you can just stand there if you have nothing to do, which is nice. You don't have to just, like, kind of keep attacking or make your character look back and forth to maintain your combo. No. It just doesn't count. And I appreciate that. It's only really counting it when you're fighting and doing important stuff. So you'll move up on enemies. So the plot of this game is that vegetables have gone bad, like criminally bad. So you're fighting like carrots and chili peppers and asparagus and artichokes, and that's the kind of nonsense that's going on here. I believe aliens might have had something to do with it, but that's the general theme, and it's charming in its nonsense. So you're beating the crap out of vegetables. So you get in there, your basic carrot is just going to kind of hop up to you. You can probably beat the crap out of it pretty straightforward. Like, other enemies will have different attacks that they'll telegraph, so you can move out of the way or try to beat them up before. And there's some enemies that they'll actually activate a quick little mini game. There's one where you have, they get up on you and you have to sit there and do a tappy and tap the button as fast as you can. There's another where, like enemies will shoot out projectiles kind of in a stream to the beat, and you deflect them on the beat. So that's fun bit of variety in there. So you'll make your way through the levels. The levels are randomly generated with, and it's not just straight left to right. Like, there are multiple branching paths in any given level, which can take you to, there's like obstacle course rooms where you have to move through traps. There are, you know, rooms that are just enemy mobs, rooms that will indicate they have harder enemy mobs, rooms that have shops, other things to interact with.
And are there multiple exits in a stage, or is it all just one self-contained stage where you could backtrack and go other routes and explore everything?
You will, you will get to dead ends. And at any point, you can pull up the map and pick a room that you've already cleared to go to at any time. Just zip right around. Nice. They don't mess around with making you like walk all the way back or find checkpoints. You can just pull it up and do it. There is only one exit. Like, ultimately, you are trying to find and defeat the boss. And if you can do that fast enough, you get a bonus room with bonus items, which I managed to pull off once, and I felt really good about myself.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Somebody is. But yeah, there's another neat little thing, like, because they have these dead ends, but sometimes enemies will drop a riddle where it will tell you to perform certain actions at a dead end, and the dead end will break, and you'll be able to go find, like, a secret room, which I think is pretty neat. And it only works on, like, they'll be like, oh, at a certain dead end, if you use your special ability three times and, like, hop to the right three times, then the, you know, something will happen. And it's like, oh, that's a neat little thing. But either way, you progress through these levels, you find items, you find upgrades, you find new weapons. Finding new weapons is a big part of the game, which range from, like, oh, you have some brass knuckles, to a sword, to a fish, to guns.
Fish.
Oh, yeah, there's some fucking nonsense in this game, which will have different properties and different, you know, attack statistics. You'll find different supplementary attack items that will make you do different things. One, you know, like, oh, I'll knock, you know, it'll be a poison spray in an area. It'll be a spin attack. It will be a Terry Bogard super from Fatal Fury, because, of course, which I appreciate that the game had a Fatal Fury reference before it had a Street Fighter one, at least in my playtime. I was like, oh, that's cool. But inevitably, sadly, you're probably going to fucking die before you get to the end of the game. So it's like four levels leading up to, I think, the final level you need to get to. And sorry, I heard some wailing upstairs, so it's either a ghost or my wife is watching like a British drama where something tragic just happened.
It's ghosts.
One of the two.
Don't tell Mahoney.
I don't know. Well, when I came down to the basement, the light immediately went out, and that never feels good when you come down here at night. what the fuck is... Okay.
Well, it was good having you on the show, Tim. We will miss you. Yeah,
sorry I'm haunted. You should definitely buy this game, though, because it's fun. Anyways... So anyways,
you'll die. Out of the way.
Yeah, good. Let me get the important shit in before my life expires here. I'll die, and people are like, well, should I buy Rhythm Fighter or not? I don't know. Will they give us another code?
You will be the only one who can tell me.
If the reviewer literally got killed by a ghost on the air, I don't know. It's never come up. Seems like you should. What are you afraid of? Ghosts? Will come for you next. Anyways, so you'll die in the game, not in real life, and you'll get pulled back to this kind of spaceship hub world where you don't like get currency. I mean, you do get currency, but it doesn't last past the run. Used in shops and shit. But you will, as you progress, you'll unlock achievements like, oh, you killed this many enemies, you got past this level for the first time, you did this many of this, you did this many of that. And as you unlock achievements, then you get coins, which you use to unlock more fighters who have they'll have a different special ability and different statistics. And you can use those coins to upgrade those fighters. So that's the way in which you kind of push back against the roguish elements of the game is by taking those coins and achievements and unlocking more characters and upgrading them and whatnot. Also, once you're in the hub, you can unlock a training room. So if an enemy is giving you fits, you can get into a training room and practice against it with music, which is cool. And yeah, that's basically the loop. You go out there, you hop and fight and kick these vegetables' asses. If vegetables have asses, most of them don't. I don't believe unless they grow in a weird way. And then you post it on Insta and you're like, look at this carrot's ass. You go through, you have
fun. Now we know what you're looking at on Insta.
I'm actually not on Insta. I'm just guessing.
So, mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
A likely story if I've ever heard one.
Go on, look me up. There's nothing there.
It's all under X Strike Studios. It's not under Tim Akamis.
I don't know how to find account. Anything on Instagram because I don't use phone.
Veggie Booty Fan 69.
Veggie Booty.
Veggie booty fan.
Oh my god. So Rhythm Fighter.
Well, is it 69 or is it?
No, I got 69. Yeah. 68.
Well, Rhythm Fighter is 17, so I'm wondering, is it worth that many dollars?
It is worth that many dollars. I talked a lot about the gameplay, but like the visual style of the game is also very good, like just good art when you're in the levels there, like thumping and bumping along to the beat. So there's lots of indications that you are, you know, of whether you're in the groove of the game, and they have options for kind of adjusting if you think you're a little too late, a little too early. The music is, I don't know if it's not like Necrodancer good, but it's good. I don't know if I'd buy the album, but it's certainly good and works well with the game, and, you know, will get you toe tapping and thumping along and punching things and having a good time. So yeah, it's a good, cool little game. They're really, I've not much bad to speak of here.
Nice.
If anything, nothing. I said nothing bad about it. So there.
Except possible ghosts in your house.
Except possible ghosts in my house. So yeah, if I get killed, then I might have to change my mind about the game.
All right,
if they send vegetable
good.
Ghosts at me.
Yeah, if vegetable ghosts murder stuff. You, then this is going to be a deny it. But as it stands, it sounds like a buy it.
So far, yeah.
All right. Well, Tim, always a pleasure having you on. We will let you get going.
All right, cool.
Do you have any final thoughts, final words before we let you go?
Someone else is going to have to take up the banner of giving Purnell shit on the rest of his reviews. So,
no, they don't.
Good luck and
I think
good
Cole
luck.
Will proudly pick up that Cole. Mantle.
I got this.
Just as soon as he says a number, get him.
Christ. Next week, right. Colors. So you find it. What was it? How many letters? Is it the name of the color?
What shade? Is it chartreuse?
All right, Rod Canary or Dandelion.
Oh my god. All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Bezier Second Edition, developed and published by Thalamus Digital, released January 21st on the Switch for $19.99. Bezier is a twin stick blaster set inside a vast computer built deep underground. The story traces the principal's escape from this Noah's Ark gone wrong. The simple shooter on the surface, the deeper narrative pulls in his relationship between evolution and God. Family and love. These themes question his motives, force him to confront what is real, and lead him to salvation. Chris, what is Bezier?
It's hardly that. It just it throws some text between stages that, like, kind of, it's like that indie style of, like, doing, you know, beat poetry between, like, you know, just basic ass stages. Like, that's all it is. But that's not a complaint. It's a flavor. Do you navigate levels? Huh? Okay. I'm going to stop reading chat now. So yeah, Bezier is a twin stick shooter. It is. And you know, as soon as you see it, you're going to like instantly think Geometry Wars, because you are a kind of a shape and you're blasting like other shapes, and you're literally like on a grid, and like there's, you know, explosions and not like those big wild undulations that you'd see on like Geometry Wars, but it's like, you know, it's very neon and nightlighty and stuff like that. And so yeah, you go, but then like once you kind of get more into it, you kind of notice that it's also pulling from some other series. So you know, again, the game has you, you know, rolling around, one stick to move, one stick to, you know, aim and shoot. And, you know, you go around defeating like waves of enemies, little enemies and stuff like that. And eventually bigger enemies show up. They're called shields. And you go up to them. They have different ways of like attacking you, usually with smaller ships as well. And so like you kind of have to figure all that out. The whole thing is done on a timer. So you actually have, it's less trying to survive, although there is a survival mode, we'll get to that. But in the normal mode, it's less about survival and more about like you actually have to get there and get them in time. And so to aid you in this, not only do you have your blaster, but you also have an upgrade system that's really akin to Gradius. So along the bottom, you have your little grid of like power-ups, you have your boost and your blaster. And as you go through and defeat enemies and they give you drops and stuff like that, you can collect little lights, and it'll like highlight one of those type of things that you can then either upgrade, or if you, you know, if you don't upgrade, then the next time you get one, it moves up the block, like I said, just like Gradius. And if you skip the boost and the blaster upgrades, of which you can get 10 each, so there's like a lot of different ways you can upgrade in this game, it then goes into special sub-weapons, and you can then unlock special sub-weapons to help you out, and they just, you know, they, you can use them infinitely as far as I know, but they have a cooldown timer, so they're kind of like a special move. And they're really cool. Like, there's about like seven of them. And ending on the Firefly, which is apparently a an option ship, but I never let it get that high, so I only know from the tutorial, or not the tutorial, but there's a how to play section in the menu that actually goes over each and every detail, which is really, really helpful. Because the game itself only, you know, doesn't really tell you too much. So it's all in those option menus. And by the way, I was talking about pretentious indie like text and stuff. In the how to play section, there's 8 different entries. 7 of them are for the actual things that you can get in the game. And the 8th one is called The Mark of Cain. And if you look at the text on it, it just says, "It is a big step to take another human life. It is not to be done lightly. I know of men who have taken life needlessly in other conflicts. I can assure you that they live with the mark of Cain upon them. Colonel Tim Collins, Iraq 2003. It's just a quote.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the kind of game this is.
Jordan and Chad, that's got to be Cain.
That's got to be Cain. Anyways. So, yeah, you like go, and there's another, there's two more like kind of things that the game pulls from. Once you beat a stage, basically you beat all the shields. As long as all the shields are done by the time the timer goes out, then you get through the level. If not, you die. At some point, usually with about 20-ish seconds left on the clock, they send the final boss after you. His name is Modus, I think. Or let me see here. Domus. Sorry. I was dyslexic. And Domus is described in the options menu as a proper Burke, which, if you're English, that's really funny. He's a wrong'un, a proper Burke. And he's actually invincible, so it might remind you a little bit of, like, Sinistar or something like that. You can't actually kill him. You can only avoid him until you actually get to the stage where you can do damage to him. And so that's in there, too. And by the way, he's just, like, an angry face. He's just, like, a little, like a space emoji going like at you, like little lights floating around him. He's very cute. And yeah, it does tell you that in the options that he's invincible until the final stage. And it says, then unleash hell onto his stupid face. So, yeah. And the way that you get to that final stage, by the way, there's 15 stages, but it goes pyramid style, just like Darius or Darius, if you prefer, where it branches off into paths and then you select like what path you want to go on to. Now, of course, each path is titled with a sentence rather, or with a phrase or something, instead of like telling you what the stage is. So, you know, I don't remember what those are either, but it's, again, it's just the flavor of the game, like just kind of dumping text on you that's like vaguely poetic. So yeah. As far as like the actual shooting goes, it's fun and frantic. Like I said, it's majorly like Geometry War vibes, which that's one of my favorite. That is actually literally my favorite twin stick shooter. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. So I was really appreciative of those vibes. I really like the upgrade system. Soundtrack really bumps. I really enjoy that. It looks good and it plays well. So
cool. Then $20 on Bayzier Second Edition. What do you say?
I say, yeah. I also say that, I say it's a buy it. And also, if you happen to be listening to this podcast, go check it immediately and see if it's still on pre-order, because the pre-order discount's pretty good.
Yeah, I see. Pre-order discount's $4.99. So
yeah, you can have it for $5 right now, and it's absolutely worth $5. But I also think it's worth $20. So
pick it up either way.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, next game is called Sense, a cyberpunk ghost story developed by Top Hat Studios and Suzaku published by East Asia Soft, released January 7th on the Switch for $19.99. In Neo Hong Kong 2083, a young woman named Mi Lin Mak is dragged into the maelstrom of supernatural horror. As she peers into the century-old mystery, Mei is forced to question her perception of reality and her trust of her cybernetic eyes. Hernell, tell us about Sense.
So, Sense is a game that is pretty much a 2D adventure title. The idea is that you are kind of walking left to right. There's no verticality in this game. That's going to be how all my reviews start now. There's no verticality. Or there's lots of verticality.
Yeah, but how many D was it again?
How about you're not going to be as good as Timid Thistle? Stop!
I'm sorry, I had to. 8D, got it, let's go.
Tell us the year, Purnell.
I know it was like, I wonder if that's already the problem. I want to say like, it takes you back to the freaking 1980s, which in its own right kind of hinders the whole cyberpunk element in and of itself, because the game starts out in the Neo Hong Kong, but you only spend like 20 minutes there. Just going back and forth until you get to the spot where you're, for story reasons, you're kind of kicked into this 1980s apartment complex. And your main character is tasked with exploring this complex and surviving her encounters within it. So the gameplay in this isn't particularly deep. You essentially are, it's broken up between floors. You occasionally do have to go back and forth to older floors depending on the clue you need. But what ends up happening is you end up on a floor. And you are presented with a series of rooms, some you can enter and some that you can't. And you're looking for just various cues of like items to find or things you can interact with to, in order to progress toward the next key point. And then eventually that key point will lead to the next floor. Encounter wise, there, you can't actually fight enemies in this game, but there are opponents that will show up every once in a while in the form of ghosts, the hauntings that exist within the apartment complex. And what usually ends up happening is when you encounter one, you have to just kind of evade it, but there's no evade button, which means if you see one, you have to hope you can get into a door that's nearby. These are all fairly scripted, by the way, so you're not going to be just like wandering the hall and then suddenly, oh crap, he spawned here. No, it's if the game intends for you to see a ghost, you're going to see the ghost at that point. And when that happens, you need to get away from it.
Yeah, like the ghost that murdered Tim.
Exactly. Okay. It was conditionally, it was already there. It didn't randomly spawn. So you, as you pretty much try to evade these things and get away from them, if you can get into the proper room that's intended or go out into the fire escape or whatever you need to do, you can avoid it. However, sometimes you might find yourself in a situation where you just can't do it or you screw up and you get caught. There's an item in the game called Jade Bangle. You can hold a finite number of them. So there is a max, but if you have one on when the ghost contacts you, you can press the B button to dodge it. So it's basically like a free hit without losing your game. However, if you don't have a Jade Bangle on and the ghost catches you, you will die. There are narrative ways for you to get rid of the ghost, though. The normal way is to exorcise them by using various items that you might come across, such as like an offering kit and like the equivalent of like glow sticks and some matches to kind of pray the ghost away. It's pretty much like saying, I send you to the afterlife, that sort of bit. However, later on in the game, you get other tools in the form of like a sword, which you can kind of swing, like in a little kind of whoosh, whoosh, like wonky fashion. Like it's not like full on combat, and it's just more like there's a ghost. Just mash the button and hope you hit it. And then you'll make the ghost go away. And then you also like throw like salt or like see your holy rice and to pretty much take the ghost out. So, that is pretty much the whole game. The one thing that I should mention also the atmosphere. The atmosphere in the game, I will say, it looks nice, but I never really particularly felt creeped out. But at the same time, it still kind of does its job, I suppose, for what it does. And due to the fact that some of the choices will see you get killed for choosing them, it does also kind of make you want to be aware of what you're selecting when you select things. Like, it might be a scenario where like, hey, I can put my hand in here. Do you want to do it? Like, maybe think about that before you decide to just put your hand in the sink willy-nilly. But those options pop up. Though, unfortunately, I did have one major issue with this game, which would determine if a lot of other people like it or not. And that is that when it comes to games like this, there are two things that generally, or three things that generally drive things along. the narrative, any action, if the game does include action sequences, which we already described this game really doesn't, it's more like a puzzly thing than anything, and the puzzles themselves. Like, what do you need to do to access this? How do I solve this predicament? However, the way this game does the puzzles, it really irked me. It's like some games you might come across a bunch of different stuff and be able to say, okay, I'm going to need this, or I'm going to take it with me because later on I might need it. But the way this game does it, it's best way to describe it is, like, I don't think it really values your time. So to give you an example, the third floor, there's like six rooms and six apartment rooms, and it goes around the building. So you run down the hallway, open the door, and you'll see something like, for example, a back scratcher. And the character will outright acknowledge, hey, here's a back scratcher. That's pretty nice for or whatever. And they'll see the back scratcher. The word back scratcher will be highlighted in text, and they'll comment on it. But you can't pick it up. You can't do anything with it. So then at that point, later, you have to go all the way around the building to the other side to get to a room that says, man, if I could reach that, that would be cool. And then go all the way back around the building to get the back scratcher. But you can't get the back scratcher yet because you need one other item. And until you get the other item, you won't even get the option to pick up the back scratcher. It's like, you know you need it. You want to pick it up, but the game won't let you pick it up. And you're stuck. There's another time where the character's like looking under the couch. She sees an ink pen. It's like, that's going to be important. Maybe she just, you know, take the ink pen right now. But now you can't pick it up. It's got to stay there until the game decides you want it. Then you have to go back to get the ink pen. We could just put the damn thing in your pocket and just carry the pen around the whole time. Like, what if I got to stab a ghost with it? Or write on a piece of paper. It'd be cool to have a pen on hand, but nah, can't do anything with it until the game tells you to go back and find it. So it just feels like a waste. But that one of you going back and forth around the entire building, that was the biggest slap in the face for me, just because of the amount of time it took to do the full lap. When you could have just had it so I could just pick it up because I'm clearly checking it right now. I feel as though I want it. Let me carry it. No, you can't. You got to wait till the game wants you to. And it's not even just about all like larger. Some of it happens in small rooms too. Like, you might be in a room where it'll be like three things that are interacting with each other, but you have to trigger the right thing before reading the second thing, before reading the third thing. And I'm not saying something that's equivalent to like, hey, if you press this button, this panel will turn, which reveals this box, which you insert into this divot, and now this opens up. That would make logical sense. Now I'm saying like, hey, here's a table. There's a piece of paper on it, and it's dark. It would be nice to light it up. You're carrying a lighter, and there's a candle, but you can't use the lighter on the candle because until you actually indicate, hey, this light doesn't work, you can't light the candle. Despite the fact that you have everything you need to light it, there's a candle, there's a lighter, just turn the fucker on. No, you got to make sure that the lamp's not working, which means you got to do an extra step. It's dumb. Like, it's like the most base level form of, you know, object to solution puzzle solving or creation and solving. And it's, I don't know, it bugged me, and it bugged me a lot.
That said, Aki in chat is saying that you haven't mentioned the most important thing, and that is the boobs. The
boobies! Oh, there's some tits. There's big tits. Apparently there was like a whole, I didn't even realize it until like I started looking into it. There's apparently a whole controversy about this. Like, the developer was talking about, we're not going to censor this game. You got the breasts. You come for the best breasts in the town or whatever. I don't know. But this game, the main character got huge knockers. There's a strip club at the beginning of the game where the virtual dancers got huge knockers. Literally every woman in the game has at least 30 to 40 pound breasts. Yeah, can we talk about the show? 40 pound
breasts. That was important to specify.
Yeah, nice callback.
Yeah, you know.
Was that even all- on the show? I don't remember.
Probably not, but it is now.
And even their hips are like massive. Like, I don't know where you buy pants to contain those hips, but man, they're packing them. But aside from just the general spectacle of like big breasts, big hip women littering like the intro areas of the game, there's like no real general nudity, so people don't have to worry about that per se. And the main character is pretty much like, she is what she is. Like, she runs around, she does that kind of like run, which I'm sure her back is killing her running around that building. But every once in a while, there are the occasional moments where you can access like a different costume change. Like, it might be something simple like a coat hook in a room where if you interact with it, she'll say, oh, I'm hot in this coat, I'm gonna take my coat off. And she takes the coat off, and then you put it back on, But if you go to the menu, you can select, I like her without her coat. And now you can run around with coatless Mai, which, if that's your thing, it is available to you. I don't know how many costumes there are, and for all, I probably didn't even find all the ones that are in the game, but there are just a couple different like costume changes based on stuff like that, things you find in the game that you can change into or whatever. So
yeah, boobs.
Booby Hootie McBoobies.
Yeah.
Busty St. Clair's, Chesty LaRue's.
Again, this episode of the show brought to you by Mountain Dew Major Melon. $20 on Sense, a cyberpunk ghost story. What do you think?
I'm going to have to give it a lower end try it, because I feel like if you want to give this game a go, I'd recommend more so waiting for it to get a little cheaper than that. Because even though I did find myself wanting to see the end of the game after I already started it, I genuinely attribute it to that syndrome you get into where you've already started the project, so you may as well see it to the end. But I also got it for free. If I paid $20 for that, I'd have been kind of meh. But if I got it cheaper, I would have been more willing to forego the other issues that I had with it, because I wanted to see what the deal is with her being in that apartment building, and what is it? Why is she the chosen? Without saying too much, why is she chosen to be there? And blah blah blah. So,
Aki is still mad that you got this one, but she doesn't have a Switch, so fuck it, Aki.
Boobies.
Yeah, boobies indeed. All right, let's move on. The next game to talk about is called The Child Sight, developed by Handmade Studios, published by Forever Entertainment, released January 15th on Xbox One for $9.99. See the world through the innocent eyes of a small child. Slowly unravel the story of what has happened while you were laying in your crib, observing the world around you. Some things may remain faded, but one story sticks with you to this very day. Cole, tell us about The Child Sight.
Do you want to know what the story is that'll stick to you?
Sure.
Shit jumping out of the dark at you. That's what it is. Okay?
How many things?
All the things. Allow me to elaborate on that. Because when you start the game, the very first, like, prologue chapter is you get to walk around and you get to like look in this nursery. There's a crib and it's kind of in an attic, which is a little weird, but you know, whatever.
Who doesn't store their babies in the attic, really?
I mean, you know, they write books about it, but it's a thing. So, you know, there's some notes and you can pick up, and I'm like, okay, this is mundane, right? This is basically just walking sim territory. Click on the crib and it starts the next chapter, and now you're the baby in the crib. And the game gives you some information. Basically that you need to do certain tasks when certain audio cues go off. And it starts you off small. And this is the point where I realized, holy shit, this is Five Nights at Freddy's and Emily Wants to Play style of gameplay, right? Only you're stuck in this fucking crib. And I'm like, okay, I've figured out what I'm doing here. I'm a baby stuck in the crib. You can reach over, grab a deer and hug it. Or the primary point is like, close your eyes and sleep and fill your sleep meter for the night. But your carousel light will go off and then you have to wake up and turn your night light back on, right? All things that newborns should not be doing, but here we are. we're not gonna focus on it.
By the way, quick update. I said the price was $9.99. It's $4.99. My mistake.
Yeah, I did think that seemed a little high.
Yeah, but, my mistake. Right, so $4.99.
So yeah, you start off and it's simple enough. It's like, just make sure you sleep, but don't sleep so long that your lantern goes off. Because if the little carousel lantern goes off, some big motherfucker's going to stick its head through the crib and scare the shit out of you. Ask me how I know.
Has that happened?
Because I was not ready. I thought I had a little more time. I did not. And then this just basically carries on throughout the game. It's very similar setup of like different tasks for each night, only as opposed to it being a night in the game, each chapter is like a different life stage. This is all well and good. It gets a little more difficult to add in a different mechanic here and there. The problem is, like, when you get to the final chapter, and then it's like everything at once comes for you. Every one of these games struggles at this point, because this is where, specifically with Child's Sight, it goes, fine, now you gotta stand up, sit down, close your eyes, open your eyes, don't move, turn on the light. And it wants you to do conflicting tasks, and you just have to pick one of them and hope it's the one that doesn't get you killed. That's my biggest gripe with all of these, is like, at that point, they're just trying to hurl jump scares at you, and it kind of sucks. I would like a little more of a tone down when it comes to the final chapter, just so at least you're not like, stand up, sit down at the same time. Something's going to kill you if you don't do both. That's just my biggest gripe. And every game in this genre does that. It's always a thing to bitch about. I think it's a little worse in Child's Sight than in some of the others I've played, just because it's just nonstop conflicting tasks.
No.
So it can be a bitch. The other thing that I wanted to point out, and this may be a little more of a heightened issue because I've been having problems with my hearing. I've mentioned it a couple shows ago. I've had some problems, well, last show. We were on hiatus up until then. but I've had a little bit of issues with my hearing lately, and everything kind of sounds muted to me. And in this game, everything is an audio cue. There's no visual indicators at all. I would like at least an option to turn on some kind of visual indication of the task that you need to do. Because it's just, there were a lot of times where I thought I was doing great, and then I just got jump scared, and I was sitting there going, but I didn't hear anything. So, you know, a visual indicator would be good. But yeah, beyond that, it's fine for what it is for the genre that it is. I don't think it shakes up anything, but it also doesn't necessarily have to, right? Sometimes it just has to do what it does well, and it does up until that final chapter.
And it's only $4.99, so.
It's only $4.99. I kind of feel like at that point, if you like these kind of horror games, it's a fuck it, why not? So like if you played Five Nights and you're like, fuck yeah, I need more of that, then here you go. You're going to be happy with it.
Works for me.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is Infernal Radiation, developed by Asmodev, published by Art Game Studios and Ultimate Games, released December 28th on Steam for $9.99. Smash demons and deflect bullets in a hardcore action arcade clicker with RPG elements. Chris, what is Infernal Radiation?
I want to know what an arcade clicker is. I've never heard of that before.
This is an arcade clicker.
That's what it is. Okay, well, for my money, it seems more like an RPG with, like, timing. But anyways, so, yeah, this is a, it's kind of an RPG. Like, basically, so the story of this game is that there's this island called Halloween Island. This game's great on names, by the way. And you are a cardinal named Cardinal Godsend, who I think that's his name. Let me check myself here. Well, anyways, whatever.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Cardinal Godspeed. I got it wrong. And
Cardinal Good Pastor. Got it.
Yeah, Cardinal Good Pastor. That would actually be a great name. That would be really good for this game, actually. Anyways, in the lore of this game, there are power plants that are powered by hellfire, which is a great idea. Like fire literally from hell, which literally exists in this game. And one of them explodes. And so a lot of that's where you get infernal radiation, because the island's basically on fire. But instead of it being like the kind of fire that burns up all of your skin and hair and bones and stuff, it burns your soul. So like you're here to save the souls of people who are basically on fire. And <Okay. laughs> yeah, the game's got a little bit of an abstract bent to it. The first character you come across is a pig with sunglasses named Marvin Scoosher. And you know, your character himself is like a cardinal, but he also wears like that birdie nose pointy like plague mask that everybody likes to put in things now. And, you know, basically, as you walk through the game, there might be like, you know, you're walking around a 3D like world that's kind of a little bit like it. You know, it's got really obvious like roads and stuff that you have to stick to. But there's a small amount of exploration and you can get like a couple of bonus items that way by going kind of a little outside the lines. But the main point is that you just try to get from point A to point B, and usually at point B there is a fight and then you have to do a fight and then, you know, move on to the next scene and try to find it. For one, it's not great on indicating where exactly you're supposed to go. So you kind of just wander around until something wants to fight you. And then you're like, okay, good. And you know, you get the lore and the story of the game and like a narration from Cardinal Goodpaster, by running across like these little light up indicators that like show a little sheet of paper. And then it pulls up like a comic book style dialogue thing. And that's like basically how the story gets told. And you run into other characters that get increasingly absurd. One of the earliest ones is a very tall. These are like possessed people that you save, like I said, by fighting them and whatnot. And like the first one's like this giant man in a wheelchair with a stovepipe hat named Abraham. So, you know, just random stuff like that. And actually, some of them are really cool. I actually like a lot of the monster designs in this game. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Giant skull that's kind of like a spider that's kind of like human legs. I like it. But yeah, the way that you fight the battles is kind of where this game's, I'm not going to say the word, where it's slightly different than other games.
Are you trying to say it's a unique experience?
No, not at all. I actually am really trying not to say that. So the way that fights work is that you have your these three balls that like follow this guy around. They're like crystallized faith. Faith materialized into, you know, it's whatever. They explain it like in the game's absurd way. And these do two things. One, they allow you to zap the enemy with holy power, which is, you know, they've got a life meter and then that life meter goes down when you zap them. Then they also have a stamina meter, and what they do is that they throw some kind of projectile at you, and then with the shoulder button or mouse button, depending on how you're playing, you have those things create a force field around you and you bounce the ball back to the enemy. And it's all based on a timer. So when your character glows green, he can either defend or attack. If there's a ball coming at you, you're going to want to defend and bounce that ball back to them. But then you got to find the time in between their attacks to attack them. Because the balls bouncing back at them will lower their stamina, which will make them easier to attack. But, you know, like in order to win the fight, you actually do have to eventually zap them. And as the enemies get bigger and more absurd, the battles become more elaborate. And so you're dodging many more you're blocking many more things. But as you go along, you can also increase your level and your character can unlock some more special moves and like cool things like that, like a lightning strike or a way to regenerate health and things like that. So yeah, it all just kind of shakes out that way. It doesn't deviate too much from the system of just running around until you find the next fight, and then you get a little story, and then you do a little fight, and then you move on to the next one. That's just kind of how the game has gone for me, for sure. I don't think it ever really gets to any like huge change in that, but it is kind of cool. Like the fights play out kind of cool. Again, I love the design of it. The lore is, like I said, absurd, and I do appreciate absurdity. It's very someone's interpretation of, like, you know, kind of like religious imagery, which is funny because I looked up this developer and they're also currently working on a second game that is, you know, the same thing. It's like a, you know, a magical like priest in like a dark setting and all this other stuff. So like I guess that's going to be their thing. And
maybe it's the same universe.
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't played that other game yet.
Infernal Radiation Universe.
Hey, I mean, it worked for Radiation Island. They they came out with a sequel.
Did they?
They did, yeah. And wow. It's Radiation City, and I haven't played it yet, but I want to download it actually at some point.
Wow, I didn't know they did a sequel. So Infernal Radiation, $10. What do you think of it?
$10. I think it's an interesting little adventure. Don't expect too much in the way of like variety and gameplay. It's basically, like I said, it's RPG battles that are timing based. If you want to get into like a kind of cool story, that's maybe not the best translation, but it is at least sincere in trying to tell a really, you know, really absurd story about like these religious things. You know, I'd say it's a buy it. You know, get it from Marvin Scoosher. he's having a day.
Sounds good. All right. Next game is called Cyber Taxi, developed by Projects from Basement, published by Ultimate Games, released October 30th on Steam for $9.99. Cyber Taxi is an action-packed driving first-person shooter and taxi simulator set in a grim version of the future. You play as a cab driver who works in a dark noir Hindenburg city and strives to escape this hellish location. Cornell, tell us about Cyber Taxi.
Cyber Taxi has no verticality. Oh, now I've knocked that out. So the best way to describe this game is pretty much like Crazy Taxi with an end game, end goal in sight. So you start out in the same place every time. You're a park in the first district, and your goal is to transport a certain number of people to their respective destinations. So if you bring up your map, you'll get a overhead view of the map, the city layout, and you'll get indications of where all of your potential fares may be. You drive up to them and you drive over them. Literally, that's how you pick them up. You run them over. And once you do, you pick them up and then they'll indicate to you where they want to go. They'll also sometimes give you a sort of question that like, might be like something silly willy. I'm not even half the time sure if the question matters so much, though. I did have one where the person asked me a question and my response said, my response to them made them say, okay, I'll double your fare if you get me where y'all want to go. And then the game will tell you where they want to go. You drive them there. If you get them there on time, you get paid. And then you go to proceed to look for your next customer. However, some of the missions can be a little different. Like it might be something simple, like just take them there. And you get the typical timer that pops up like in Crazy Taxi. It says, yeah, get them there in X amount of time before time runs out. And there's other ones that like, you might say, hey, go to this destination and blow up this building. In which case you go up to the building and you drive up to it and then boom, it just blows up because you drove into it.
that took a drastic turn. Let's see. Deliver a person. Okay. Blow something up. All right. Let's do it.
There's also stuff where I'll tell you like to go blow up a target vehicle or something, though. I was kind of annoyed by that particular mission for sure, because the game will say, go blow up this vehicle. But you would expect the vehicle to be driving around town, and then when you come across, you have to, like, you know, fire at it and attack it while it's moving, or it might attack back. Because, I mean, I can tell you right now, every damn thing else in town is firing and moving around. There's cars everywhere. There's turrets locked down shooting bullets. There's planes dropping bombs driving around the streets. There's a lot going on. But the target car that the person wants you to blow up is just parked there. You drive up to it and just park your car and fire your guns until it blows up, and then you keep moving. But that's another type of mission. There's also three rankings, like three different sects that have like ranking meters, and they each go up depending on what type of person you're transporting or fulfilling a mission for. Honestly, I never got to see what the fruits of that labor was because I didn't feel engaged long enough to see the numbers reach high points. So you have these transportation elements to it, getting from point A to point B as you find people. You have a gun that you can fire, and you can also purchase new weaponry by locating weapon dealers around town and then spending money you earn from fares to upgrade your car with weapons. However, also, like I described before, I never really felt compelled to want to even bother with using my guns unless I was specifically asked to destroy a target, because it really is Crazy Taxi in that regard. You're transporting people, and any sort of combat just feels like, why am I stopping to shoot at anything? I'm just trying to drive. And you can always heal your car by going into a repair shop and spending your money there. So I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to drive my people around, get them where they want to go. And when I take too much damage from standing turrets, I'll just drive to a healing shop, put on some armor, buy some nitro for speed boost, and heal my car. So I honestly never felt compelled to want to use guns. There is also a skill tree system where every 10 missions you complete, you get a skill point with which to attribute to it. And you get a variety of different things like a clean car, meaning that you get more money from passengers because they're happy you have a clean car. Sometimes you might get, there might be, there's another one I came across where, like, if you drive up to a drone on the street, sometimes the drone will give you money because the drone is happy and likes you. though it's weird that the skill trees themselves are connected by lines like a typical skill tree is, which usually indicates unlock this to then unlock the next thing in the tree. But there's no prerequisites. But the first thing I selected was, well, I guess it might branch out after you go from there, but I went from one to the other to the other. But at least starting on the skill tree, you can start anywhere you want. Like, there's no starting skill that then leads to other skills. It's just, here you go, buy it, boyo, and you go from there. The big issue I have with the game is that I never really felt particularly engaged with it. Like, I drove a few passengers here and there, dropped them in, dropped them off. And then after I did that, I did the next one and the next one. And usually around the 10th or 11th mission, usually around the 13th at most, I just found myself going, I'm kind of done. I'm good. And the dumb part on me is that you can press F5 to save your game. I didn't do that. I was just like, I'm done. And I just turned it off. Which means that if I took those three sessions or so and linked them back to back to back, I kind of probably had like 40 missions done, which still isn't the 55 required to leave the first sector, but still would have been 40. So it was me going like, I play for a bit, I'm done. Start it up, start over, play for a bit, I'm done. Start over, play for a bit, I'm done. And that's just kind of how it was for me. Like, the game didn't really click for me or grab me. The music in it was nice, though, which I appreciate. Like, I actually ended up Shazamming one of the tracks that was playing in the car. And it's by a person named, like, Mike Gamer or something like that. I have to, like, look, like, double check. And it's, like, a really cool song. And the guy has put out albums, so he has music out there. And it's a great track. And there's a few tracks that play in the game. There aren't a ton, but they loop in a way where I never really found myself feeling bored of them. It was just more like, there's that track again. It's almost like short loop music. But it's good music, so I was okay with it. It's just, again, also worth mentioning, at the beginning of the game, you choose the color of your taxi cab. And it's not just a cosmetic thing. The color of your taxi cab determines your starting perk, which is, I did think that was pretty cool too. But, and I did read some of the reviews on Steam because I wanted to see if I was maybe missing something about this game. And there are a lot of people that were referencing some games that were like on early PC games that were similar to this, that they were all like, well, this takes me back to that. And I can understand that that's probably what they were going for. Especially because you can't even use a controller. Like, the game forces you to use the keyboard to play, which I'm not sure if you know, Joe, from knowing me for years, but me and keyboard gameplay don't get along.
The same way, man.
Yeah, it was killing me. I'm like, I'm getting, my fingers are hurting. I'm like screwing up on turns half the damn time. It just wasn't
my world.
I understand now, Cole. We got to do something about this, because shit. If I had to play every game feeling like that, I'd be really annoyed. But it just, I wasn't really feeling the vibe, but I can also see that this does do something that some people might like. Like, if it was like Carmageddon, like, I remember Carmageddon was a game where you drove around and everybody was a target for getting hit with your car, and you had missions, but most people played it because they like the idea of like running people over and stuff like that. And this game does give you your fair share of running over pedestrians and crazy Molotov cocktail throwing jerk faces. So, I mean, sky's the limit. So I did think it was funny that the guy at the beginning says, don't run over pedestrians. I'm like, okay. And I ran over pedestrians. Yep. And no one cared. Like, at most, you lose some shield or health because logically you damaged your car when you took a corpse to it. but, I mean, there was no real, like, penalty. There was, like, a morality bar or anything like that that says running over pedestrians is bad for you or whatever. So it's like, eh. Just run people over, pick up people, drop them off. Do it again and again and again and again and again, except sometimes blow up a car and blow up a building. And I will honestly say that this game was not for me because it could not hold my attention. But that doesn't mean it's not for a person who grew up playing PC games in the late 90s that see this and go, is this going to reignite my sense of nostalgia? Because I'll be honest, I have played a few games from back then, back in, like, you know, when people used to smuggle games in the computer lab and whatnot, you know. So I at least know what those
floppies.
That's right. Like, I got this game I brought in. You want to play? Yeah. Install all the teachers out the room, which I used to love doing. That. I used to play Mega Man X on the PC, and I felt like a champ doing that. Because I played that on a keyboard. Imagine playing that on a keyboard. It's not easy. But I pulled that mess off. But in the end, I have played enough of those games to know what they were kind of like. And I can say that I did get that sense of nostalgia from it. It's just that I wasn't big on those games back then either. It was just something to kill time in lab. But if you were like really into that kind of stuff and you want that nostalgia kick in the pants, this game will give it to you. I have no doubt of that. It's just, if you're not here for the nostalgia, if you're here for a brand new game that's going to, you know, wet your whistle for like a new experience, I'd look elsewhere.
Well, then $10, your official verdict.
I think try it is good for this, because it tells the line between the two halves of what I said. So buy it if you want that nostalgia, because it will provide you with that. But if you're here for something new, it would be denied. So ultimately, so try it.
Works for me. All right, one final game to talk about tonight is called Ghostinoid, developed by Qplays, published by Joybits, released January 21st on the Switch for $6.99. The craziest Arkanoid. Everyone has a normal job, and we have houses with ghosts. Hopefully not the ghost that killed Tim earlier. Cole, tell us about Ghostinoid.
In my house, whenever something falls magically, my kids say that it's a ghost named Margaret. I don't know what... But that came to mind when you were talking about the ghost killing Tim earlier. And I was like, well, Margaret did it. There is no Margaret in Ghostinoid, but there are a whole lot of different little ghosts. You're essentially playing Arkanoid. There's a building. I love that the level design is basically like wood for flooring, and then there's furniture sitting on it. And then you have a ball and you need to demolish it. It's essentially a haunted house. You get three lives to start with, and just like any other brick breaking game, you'll break the bricks, you'll destroy the furniture. There's two ways to finish a level. You can either clear all of the items that are in the house, or you can just destroy the ghosts. I have yet to clear a level by destroying everything, because killing the ghosts is just so much easier. With that said, even killing the ghosts is a bitch, because there is a constant onslaught of debuffs that drop. Just like there are power-ups that can, you know, give you a fireball. just like, you know, there are the power-ups like the fireball or a multi-ball. There are also debuffs like Jesus Christ, I'm just going to end up saying every fucking word that everybody makes fun of me for.
The funny thing is the fireball in this is called the all-punching ball, so you didn't even have to say fire.
Yeah, but there's the firefighter ghost. I'm just going to rip the Band-Aid off and let the accent out. There's a firefighter ghost.
A fart fighter? What was that?
Fart fighter. And it will put out the four ball, and you can't, then it doesn't just like zoom through things anymore. Fart like ball. It does when it's a, yeah, four ball.
Fart ball.
God damn it. there's no safety with this game.
You're lucky Tim's not here. He would be ripping you apart.
I know it. And this is my payback.
He's a beast. He will take you down.
this is my payback for hitting Purnell on the numbers earlier.
A fart fighter puts out a different type of gas.
Burn the coal.
So, there's, as I was trying to say, this is my number one bitch about this game, is that there is just a constant onslaught of debuffs. So it feels a lot like the times that you lose aren't because you fucked up, but because the game was just like, no, you're going to lose a life now, whether you like it or not. For instance, if you're trying to get the paddle over to the ball to bounce it back up, it seems like it should be relatively simple, except for there might be three or four debuffs that have fallen in front of that ball, and they fall down so rapidly that you don't always have an option to get around them or wait for them to pass. You're just kind of stuck getting hit. So then your paddle's frozen and then your ball drops anyway and you're fucked no matter what. Because the power-ups and the debuffs are so large on the screen, there's no real way to navigate around them. Now that's useful that they're larger, like if you're playing, this is on the Switch. We all fucking know I hate playing on the Switch. Like, it's useful that they are as large as they are when you're playing in handheld mode. It helps because then you can at least tell the difference of them, but it doesn't matter because they're all gonna fuck you anyway. But when you're playing like docked in on a screen or something, it just kind of makes it all that much more prominent that there's no way to get around them. And then you just get annoyed because you're like, I was fucked no matter what I did. It's luck, not skill, you know?
And it's never fun when a game comes down to luck.
Yeah, and it just takes any feeling of success or gratitude out of it because you're like, well, this is, yeah, I just lucked into getting it that time, you know? And
no.
Even the kids have played a couple of times and they were like, we just get stuck. Number one or number three was like, I didn't get past level one yet. And number two is like, well, I'm stuck on level four. And I'm like, well, I made it to 12.
For now, how far did you make it?
The intro screen, because I didn't get to start it.
Oh, but you
know,
suck.
The funny thing about that? You want to know what's even better? What? After the intro screen, there's literally a part when you're playing the first level where the little character dude pops up in the corner and he's like, most people don't even make it this far.
Are you serious? Damn.
And there you are.
I didn't even beat the statistics. Damn. No, I will say that what you just described about the game does sound like what I would expect from Arkanoid or an Arkanoid clone, which is that there's always the beginning of a stage where you're just like smashing blocks and you feel like a real champ. And then at the end where there's like one final target to hit and you have no control over the ball, you're just like, bonk. All right, that's not the right angle. Bonk.
Like 15 minutes is just hitting the same corner over and over.
I never really ran into that, but I also just didn't get the option to, because if I was doing that well, something probably went my way enough that I knocked out the ghost and didn't have to clear the board. So I never like even found myself in a position where I was just like constantly bonking, which is great because the ghost will fucking drop debuffs even if there's nothing else going on and you don't have any control over that shit. I don't even know what some of them are. I'm like, that's an icon. I can't figure it out, but I just know it's red and I don't want to touch it. So,
don't risk it.
So I mean, even that, like, that was what I was prepared for, to just be stuck forever trying to hit one damn block in a corner. And I didn't even ever make it that far because either I cleared the ghosts or I just got fully face fucked. Now, beyond the face fucking, if you had handed me Ghost Annoyed and you had let me play two or three levels of it and then said, who made this game? I would have been like, duh, it's PopCap. Like, I was fully prepared for this to be like a Peggle-like kind of Arkanoid game, right?
Well, see, that sounds like a compliment to me.
And it is a compliment, like, other than the fucking debuffs, the game was great. Like, I had a really good time when I was into it, and then when I would just get slaughtered and not be able to move my paddle, that's when I was like, I'm about to throw the Switch because I fucking hate it anyway, and this isn't helping.
Switch it up!
I don't think your kids would be happy if you...
No, they would not. It's already got stick drifts for the second set of controllers, so we need another set.
Damn.
Yeah, they've killed two sets of Joy-Cons on it already. Two Joy-Con, whatever. But yeah, they've killed two sets already. They have a couple Power A controllers, but they're going to need another set of Joy-Cons. I guess I'll be getting that soon. Yeah, I mean, I wanted to really like it, and I wanted to have fun with it, and there was a lot there to enjoy. I mean, they went, so far is to like have all these different types of ghosts that have all these different abilities. You know, like I mentioned, the one that can put out the fireball, and there's another one that can just rebuild blocks back, and they sometimes they pop out of dryers, and sometimes they're just there, and there's so much creativity going on. There's a whole workstation workshop where you can go and buy upgrades and buy upgrades for the buffs that drop and for your paddle, and it's like the groundwork is there. The basis for a good game is there.
No.
And then just for fuck's sake, slow down the debuffs a little bit, at least in the earlier levels. Let my 8-year-old who beat Super Meat Boy get off of level 1, please.
Well, $7, what do you say?
I'm gonna go with a try it. Go into it knowing you're gonna be really fucking annoyed at those debuffs, but when you're in it and you're having a good time with it, it's a good time.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Made it through another one. Pernell, thanks for being here. It was good having you back after our hiatus. Chris, thanks for being here. I know you were on the last episode, so thanks for showing up again.
Oh, thank you. I mean, you're welcome.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, you know, you were here. Yeah.
Want me to say oh?
Sure.
You already said it.
Oh. For old time's sake.
For old time's sake, yeah. And another thanks to Tim for being here, hanging out with us. We're going to play a little music to wrap up the show. Does anyone have any final words to end it?
Welcome 2021. May you not suck as much. Be chill or some shit.
It'll suck.